It is Merlin Man Week on Fits and Starts, and we could not be more excited.
I'm so excited.
So excited. Merlin Man is a man about the internet who got his start talking about Mac and Apple and reporting on Apple News, and he used to talk a lot about productivity and email and a lot of other things. He had a very popular blog and helped to reframe the popular book Getting Things Done by David Allen, and had this whole life on the internet.
We talked to him for 2 hours about Inbox Zero.
And he sort of doesn't really talk about those things anymore. He does a bunch of other fun things. Like, he has podcasts like Roderick on the Line and Reconcilable Differences and Dubai Friday and his old show, which is one of my favorites, You Look Nice Today, is fantastic. You should look it up if you haven't already heard.
And let's
not
forget Back to Work, where he does,
and
you know,
let's not forget Back to Work, where he talks about productivity still.
The remaining productivity stuff and Buddhism. Yeah.
That's right. He talks about Buddhism on there as well. So Merlin is here this week. We've been massive fans of his for a long, long time, and we have listened to probably hundreds of hours of Merlin yammering about things.
Mm.
Daniel wrote him a very neurotic email to try to get him on the show, and he was kind enough just to say yes. And
he did.
So you'll hear about that email. You'll hear about some of the other shows, and then he gives us some really good guidance on a few things, even though he says that he hates advice.
Seriously, if you like this podcast, we only made it because of Merlin. So
that's pretty much true. I feel like we're peaking right now, and I don't really know where to go from here.
I guess we could go down.
We could go down. Expect only worst guests from here. Just kidding, because 2 weeks from now, we're going to have Brianna Wu on the program.
Brianna Wu, who knew?
Brianna Wu is a technologist and a video game developer who has decided that she's going to run for Congress, which is incredible. So enjoy this episode. If you're not already subscribed, subscribe now, because we've got some more exciting stuff along the way. And I think that's pretty much it. Did I miss anything? Keeper of the house?
One thing I'd like to call out. I would like to get some sort of a Morning Zoo soundboard.
Yeah, is that in the budget?
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, you know, one of the other things that comes up on the show a lot, I know you've talked about this in other places, but it was actually really, really helpful and instructive for me, like those first few episodes of Back to Work, which I can link to. But one of the things that comes up on the show and was sort of the premise of the show early on was like our inability to finish work, that Daniel and I met each other in college and have been working on stuff, creative projects or businesses or websites or a podcast or whatever. And for years, we were getting like, you know, 20 or 30% of the way into a project. And there are these sort of vestiges of dead projects that he and I have both worked on for years and years. And now we're trying to get more serious about like just shipping, like just finishing stuff. And this podcast has been great for that we have to, you know, have content ready every 2 weeks and actually put it out in the world. But that's one of the things that you've spoken about, I think, at some length before. And I think it'd be interesting to talk to you just a little bit, because this process of making this podcast has been really, I don't know about for Daniel, but for me, it's been pretty transformative, just having to finish something every 2 weeks. And it's actually impacted a lot of other parts of my work as well.
Yeah, I get what you're saying, and I totally agree. And it's one way in which I sometimes, I don't know, I have a very, with podcasts in particular, I have a funny point of view about it, because I, partly out of laziness and partly out of other reasons, I really prefer podcasts to be very minimally edited. Right. I'm very, just because of my personality and maybe my laziness, I think with a podcast, part of the beauty of it is that you put this out every week no matter what. Doesn't matter if it's good, doesn't matter if it's bad. But don't get to where I argue with some of my co-hosts on shows about this, but like I have an eye, like a side eye, always looking at stuff that generates self-doubt that isn't useful. Like big macro level self-doubt about the direction of something can be really useful. But like if something is making you doubt the implementation of something you need to do on a regular basis, that's concerning. Like I feel like, and I mean, this doesn't have to be about podcasts. It could be about whatever, but like, it's like meditation or like exercise or like podcasts. Like you just do that 'cause that's the thing that you do now. And I think
if you,
yeah. And like pausing too much to say like, is this good enough to put out? is like, oh boy, danger, danger. Like, no, like get it the best you can in the time frame, but put it out. It's, you've got to think in things like that. I really feel like it's useful to look at the long arc, and it depends a lot on taste and preferences and how you like to roll. But I think one benefit of a project like that is it forces you to put out imperfect things on a regular basis. And I think one way to get good at stuff is being forced to put out imperfect things on a regular basis. Putting out perfect things on an irregular basis is, can be a recipe for disaster. Unless you're Stanley Kubrick, you know, like that's maybe not the best approach, because most of us are going to learn how to make this good by doing it a lot. We don't learn a lot about making it good by putting out only half of what we do. If half of what you do sucks, well, then maybe you should be doing something else. I mean, to me, that's not a signal to edit more or release less. That's a signal that maybe that's not going to be the best project for you. That differs for everybody. But like, when you're at the point of going like, am I really up to brushing my teeth today? I think you're moving in the wrong in the wrong direction. And it's, you know, I would say, like, you know, maybe the first thing you write should not be a Game of Thrones, you know, length novel. Maybe there's like baby steps you can take to getting there, but everybody has to learn their own tolerance for those things. They have to, again, back to motivation, or so some people like to say inspiration. Like, you've got to find out what it is that's making you want to do that, and then just stick with it. I mean, I've done, like, my friend Scott and I used to do a live comedy thing every month in San Francisco, and it was okay. I mean, I enjoyed it. People seemed to enjoy it, but like, I was just doing it because it was a thing that I do, and I wanted to get better at doing that. And I feel like the only way to do that is to do it over and over and over. And as you discover with a podcast, or you discover with a lot of projects, a blog, whatever, anything, you don't really figure out what that thing is until you've done it 3 to 20 times. And if you're evaluating how that went based on the second time you did it, if you're over-evaluating, well, no. Like, let the work become the work. Do that over and over, and eventually it will get better, or you'll abandon it. But, like, I feel like a lot of people are way too hard on themselves in a way that's not actually useful.
I remember I saw an interview with Quentin Tarantino where he's talking about this one time, where he's like, you know, the only advice that really matters is just, you know, it's cheap and easy to put together 5 minutes of film content every week and make at least 5 minutes of content and show it to somebody on every weekend. He's like, just do that every week and you'll figure out really quickly whether or not you're a filmmaker. I think about that a lot, because that goes against my instincts.
Well, I totally agree. And I was, coaching is the wrong word. I was, for a while, I was talking to a friend of mine who's a filmmaker, and he was getting kind of hung up, getting kind of stuck in the weeds with this, like, what should I do next stuff. And my suggestion was exactly that. It was like to go out with a camera and just make yourself shoot something, shoot and edit something every weekend. Well, I don't have time for that. Okay, we'll shoot something and edit something that you do have time to do. Like, whatever that ends up being, but whatever it is, just start doing it over and over, because it feels like you can think your way out of this and reason your way out of this. But if there's very few creative problems you can think your way out of. It really, you've got to work your way out of it or go do something else. Kind of. I mean, there are other options. I don't want to sound draconian, but if you're somebody whose stock in trade is making things, you don't get better at it by thinking about making them. You've got to make them and then do it over and over. And eventually it sucks less, hopefully, but you won't even find out. You know, it's sort of like a conversation I had with my friend Dan on Back to Work recently about Apple, where it's like, even if Apple's not making announcements that are exactly what I want, an announcement about something that's a step forward is a huge improvement over radio silence, because they're a company that makes hardware devices and software. So, like, when they're not releasing software and not releasing hardware, I mean, like, what are they? It's like, you know, it's the radio silence over the Mac Mini. This is a little bit inside baseball if you're not a Mac fan or an Apple fan, but like, the radio silence on stuff like the Mac Mini and the Mac Pro for so many years has been super frustrating, because you're like, well, what is your plan? Like, you tell us what we're supposed to do. And so I feel like, you know, that goes for anybody who's making stuff as well. You don't get better at cooking by thinking and reading cookbooks. You make some really big dishes and then try to get better at it.
I'm interested in sort of the, you know, when you used to be Merlin Mann versus what you're doing now.
Yeah.
The point where you were writing the book, right?
Yeah.
Versus now, the point where you have 4 podcasts?
Something like that, yeah. Yeah.
You're putting stuff out. You're doing it in like bite-sized chunks every week, multiple times you're releasing. And you're getting to sort of touch on all of your topics, right? And you get to be around on Dubai Friday and have a good time. And, you know, you get to talk about...
Oh, that's I don't know about... around. It's very important work. We help a lot of people.
Very. Mm-hmm. Well, it is the number one anti-Semitism in Powder's
podcast. You guys are holding the powers that be. You're holding their feet to the fire.
That's right. We just want to hold them. It's not about impeachment. It's about holding to account.
Mm-hmm. Shining a light.
Full of gum.
Full of gum. You've heard, it sounds like you've heard the show. Okay.
Oh, yeah. Deeply. But, yeah, so I'm really interested in the story where you go from working on sort of your like magnum opus style situation, something breaks down and then you end up having like a really, what looks like from the outside, a really sort of enjoyable and calmer podcasting career.
Yeah. I mean, in retrospect, I think at least the way that I've thought about it and sort of what I've landed on for now in my head is that, you know, there's this balance of like what it is you think you're good at and what you like to do, but you also really have to account for market forces, for lack of a better word. So like, for example, I mean, I got, if I wasn't one time ever somewhat well known, it came out of writing, I think. I mean, some people know me from podcasts and stuff, but it was writing a website regularly that where people kind of got to know stuff that I did. I mean, and that was great. I mean, that was fun. I got to like work on my own. I got to do this whole thing and have a website, and I was meeting people that I really admired. But like in that case today, and I don't mean to sound disparaging, but like being a writer today seems like a very, very tough racket. The stuff that mm-hmm. people want to read, the stuff that other people will help you monetize, the way that it is consumed is all uniquely ill-suited to how I like to roll, which partly explains mm-hmm. why I sometimes spend the time that I do on Twitter. Like if I'm just going to go shit something out, I could make a really pretty good, funny joke in 140 characters and I'm done with it. Mm-hmm. Whereas like the amount of time that I would put into say, let's even say like a 2000 word post or, you know, 800 to 2000, whatever, however length something I used to write would be. Like that, if I wanted to do that for a living today, especially if I were a kid starting out at some website, I mean, I don't even, what do you get paid for something like that? Not to make it all about dollars and cents, but the amount of effort and energy, the muscles that you develop as a writer today, I don't know if that's the muscles I would want to develop as a young person. So, I mean, yeah. It's not part of it's just very selfish. Like where like, I like my schedule and my availability to be a certain way. And I'm kind of a pill about that for a variety of reasons, but it's also a question of like, you know, hitting them where they ain't, as the baseball player used to say. It, you know, if you can find something that comports with the stuff that you like to do, if you're happy with how it turns out and there is potentially a way to make some money from it, I mean, who's going to run the other way from that? You know, like, I don't know. Like, I've started in the last, this is so terrible. My friend Max got me into this awful list of political people that he follows on Twitter, and I look at it all the time. And I just see the volume of stuff that writers produce today. And I, you know, I assume they're making some money from it, but like, that seems like a very tough racket based on like, you know, selling ads and page views. So I don't know if that's answering your question, but like, I feel like a lot of the itches that I wanted to scratch and many, many more are happening for me with doing these shows. And it doesn't hurt that I genuinely enjoy the phenomenon, the medium of free and open podcasts. Like, I think it's a great, great thing. I hope it never goes away, or I hope it at least doesn't go away soon. But I discover new stuff all the time that makes me so happy. I listen to hours and hours of podcasts, let's say every week. Wouldn't want to say every day. That sounds irresponsible. But I listen to a lot of podcasts. I'm always discovering new stuff. It's always exciting me. And I love that medium. I also read a lot, but I don't know, man. That just seems like a really tough racket right now.
Your mannerisms, they infect.
I'm so sorry.
It's okay, though, because I cut it out of the final cut. Like, there's minimal bit stealing.
No, take all you want. I steal bits from people all the time. It's a proud tradition. It's stupid. I really am just a big meat bag full of ticks.
Yeah.
It's the worst.
I think it was on Rectus. You were talking about, like, humming, like nervous humming. I'm like a nervous hummer or like sound maker.
Sitting there sending an email, and the Lyft driver politely asked me to stop humming, and I didn't even realize I was doing it.
Well, that's a nice turnaround that they ask you not to talk. That's a nice twist. yeah, my family always wants to talk to me. I'll be walking around the house and I'll hear this like, daddy's got headphones on. There's all kinds of things that are very difficult around the area of what I would just generally call expertise, which is like, you know, you've got this idea of what it is that you want to do. You've got an idea of like who you want to be. You maybe even have an idea of how you'd like to be regarded by others. And if you've never tested that in the real world, I'm not even saying like a full-on internship, but like there's so many things about every job, every project, however you want to slice it up. There's so many things that are difficult to grok until you've actually done it for a while, where you discover that, for example, I mean, as famously noted in my beloved Hot Fuzz by Edgar Wright, you discover that you know, the best cop in that movie is who's somebody who thinks his greatest tool is his notebook and his pen. You're like, there's so much paperwork to being a cop. You know, Nick Frost thinks it's about shooting into the air and going, ah, but like it's actually really about paying attention and writing things down. Now, if you went in that to shoot, if you became a cop to shoot your gun in the air and go, ah, you're going to be very disappointed to discover how much of it is sitting around doing nothing or writing something down. So I think that's in your case, perhaps like discovering like, oh, you know, I kind of like sitting in this chair and listening to a podcast. And this is something I like to do while I'm doing that. If you're denied the things that you'd like, if you love to be outside, but you're required to like be in like a, you know, some kind of lime deposit mine at the bottom of a shaft, like you're not going to be a happy person. And I don't know if people always fully take that into consideration. One thing you got to say about salespeople is they are fairly self-aware in a certain way. They understand their own motivation. They understand how to do it. And they learn enough about people to do what they do. But, you know, it's as they say, it's a tough racket. So, for any kind of job you have, I guess what I'm saying in general is it's useful to learn how much you would enjoy or tolerate the environment for doing your work. Who do you like to spend time with? How do you like to spend your day, or how do you not mind spending your day? And how do you feel about collaborating with people? How do you feel about deadlines? How do you feel about getting blamed for things that aren't your fault? These all sound like very abstract ideas until you have a big boy job. And then you realize that's a huge part of it. Like if you do not want to get blamed for other people's problems, don't become press secretary. There's all kinds of jobs that are super complicated because it seems like one thing and it's really something quite different.
It's a tough racket.
Tough racket.
We were joking on here about the different jobs that we thought sounded appealing or sounded cool or sounded like a fit for us when we were, you know, 18 through 22, 23, and just how radically wrong you can be about that. I've been reading this guy, Dave Evans, who wrote this book called Designing Your Life. Have you guys seen or read that or heard about that?
No.
Started the audiobook.
He's this guy who was a designer and a marketer. He was at Apple in the 80s and 90s and one of the founding members at EA. And he teaches this course at Stanford that became like the most popular course at Stanford that basically where he addresses this problem. And he basically says, none of you guys have any idea what to do with your future and you're all terrified of it. And his proposal is to think about your future as a design problem rather than, you know, a business optimization problem. And I think that's really interesting because he hammers a lot on the idea of prototyping. And that seems like a pretty good way to work around this issue of jobs that aren't a good fit for you, jobs that are not what you think they are.
That makes actually a lot of sense.
And, you know, he makes this argument. He uses one example of this, of a woman who he knew who thought that she wanted to start a bistro for 20 years and one day saved up enough money and quit her job, told everyone, I'm starting a bistro, launched it, and within 2 weeks realized, I don't want to be a restaurant manager. He's saying, you know, you could have probably tried to just bus dishes a few weekends.
That's a great example because you realize that people say they watch TV and they want to be a chef. And it's like, well, to be a chef, first you have to be a cook. And to be a cook, you have to deal with high pressure and some of the most difficult people you have ever met in your life. And you have to do it in this really hot, constrained environment. And if you've, I mean, it's funny though, because I'm looking at the Designing Your Life. Well, that's a good URL, designingyour.life. Looking at this site and Dave Evans, right?
Yeah.
He's pictured here on a sailboat, which I think is also another interesting example. Like if you could think that you've seen a movie and now you want to be a sailor. So you buy every book and magazine on sailing and you get all the gear without ever discovering how seasick you get when you're in a boat. The preparation it feels like we need to do. The prototyping idea is very appealing to me because that prototyping could be something like not even a full internship, but just going and visiting somewhere for a day. I mean, one night in an emergency room could tell you a lot about whether you want to be a doctor. Hands up here, I don't want to be a doctor. Oh my God, there's no way I would want that job. Yeah, they make tons of money and they get to wear a white jacket and have the stethoscope, but like looking at what they actually have to do their job just looks excruciating to me. Yeah. And then people get disappointed though, because they feel like they've let themselves and the world down. And, you know, again, anytime you're doing that stuff that introduces those, you know, bad and negative feelings about what you're capable of, you know, not always the best thing. Hmm. I've had several friends that were really, really smart people, top of the class, who went to law school, spent all that time. They did all the, and then it wasn't until they got out and were studying for the bar that they hated working with lawyers. Hmm. So they became professors of law. I mean, not always, but that's just an extreme example, because those are very learned and thoughtful, intelligent people. It's true for everybody. You know, the doing of a thing is very different than the way you think about doing the thing. And it's difficult to know how that will be until you've had some exposure to how you actually do it. But conversely, then I'll shut up, it's also a great way to discover stuff you didn't know you wanted to do. If you're taking in a wide breadth of topics, not just reading books is good, but going out and doing stuff and like exposing yourself to things you didn't know were possible, travel, like that can be very stimulating because you learn a lot about culture and people. And then that can start to drive you in a way where, you know what, I'm willing to work my ass off in this crazy vertical. Like, I'm not going to make any money at this nonprofit, but I realize I want to work with people who care about this one thing as much as I do and are serious about it. That can be huge. The culture of where you work becomes so important. And so, you know, but it's difficult to teach that or to, you know, there's no really effective pedagogy for saying experience is good. Because the whole nature of that kind of pedagogy is, well, let's think about it and talk about it and problematize it. And then you get your degree and go figure out what to do with the job market. Yuck.
Part two that you just started to touch on is not just what the job requires of you, but the folks that you'll be surrounded with, right? That a really interesting marketing job might sound interesting on the surface, but like you will be working on a marketing team, and is the specific team that you're looking at and the general like kind of marketing culture something that is actually appealing to you? Is that something that is going to grind your gears, or is that something that's going to be life-giving to you? I think that's another part that I didn't start thinking about until pretty recently.
That's a really good example, and I'll piggyback on that. I've had more than one job or, you know, gig in the past where I've been fortunate to know somebody who I liked that either got me the job or gave me the job. So in a lot of cases, you go into this, I have historically looked past a whole bunch of issues and focused mainly on the fact that, hey, my friend's offering me a job. I'm gonna go work in this place. Maybe I'm gonna go work for that person, or like, you know, two steps away from that person. And for a long time, you can really sail on how much you like that person and working with them. But like, ask yourself, and I'm not trying to be negative, but ask yourself, like, would you want that job if that person weren't there? And B, weren't there advocating for you.
Right.
And that can sometimes be super challenging.
Because at some point they won't be.
They probably won't. And things change and people leave and talent migrates. And I'm not saying don't take the job because of that, but be aware again of your motivation. What is it that made you want to be there? You know, because that culture, that invisible culture of where we work and how we work, I think ends up having a much higher impact than most people give it credit for.
No, he's kind of right up the middle.
I'm going to grab a seltzer water. I'm recording.
I'm recording.
And you recommended Saga to me.
Oh, that's a good comic.
I believe, like, factually that you've been aging over there, wherever you are.
Believe me, it's true. It's totally factual.
Like, I've been hearing you since Mac Break Weekly-ish.
Oh, my gosh.
When
that
I
old
was...
thing? Wow, that's a long time ago.
I think I was 14 or something.
It is very strange when you finally get to talk with somebody who you're used to only hearing. It feels a little like a dream.
Busy day on the internet.
Oh, it'd be very strange to have me be your avatar of English speaking people. What an affliction. I apologize.
Yeah, I know it's broken. The harder thing for me is like how to care about something before you have to. I'm really good at caring about something when I have to, when I'm like getting close to the wall on something. But it would be so much easier for my life if I cared about things earlier and, in advance. Does that make any sense?
Yeah, it does. I mean, partly it's the mixed bag of, I assume you're talking about like kind of like creative projects or some kind of work project. You know, if you're doing what some people call knowledge work, one of the upsides is that it's a green field. You know, you could choose to do whatever it is that you want to do. And as long as it's just you working on it, it's not public, you're not committed to it, there's still lots of flexibility, fungibility, how you do it, how often you do it, where you do it. There's all kinds of options to that. But that does become a mixed bag because you're not fully like pot committed to it yet. So there's a, you know, number of ways that can go. Some people get a million of these projects that they think about but never really, you know, execute on any kind of like an ongoing way. There's the problem of like some people are sort of perfectionists about something where like it never gets to where they feel like they can share it with people. But it does have up and downsides to it. I think maybe one way to do that is to, I think this goes for almost anybody, almost any time, is to make a fairly clear, bright line between the pile of stuff I might do over here and then the relatively small pile of stuff I am doing over here. I think one reason people get burnt out, they get tired, they get, however, they just get negative about what they're doing is by having the opposite of that, which is a million things they're not committed to, but they feel like they should be doing. And then that becomes a real like emotional drag. And then you try to find ways to stimulate yourself. You try to find ways to emulate or manufacture importance. And that's difficult to do. Sometimes you have to do that. If it's a thing that just needs to get done, you've got to do it. But I do kind of feel like, you know, it's one thing to say like everything that's in this notebook or everything that's in this text file or all this stuff in my Evernote, that's all maybe stuff. But like, don't let that interfere or corrupt the thing that you're primarily trying to work on right now, where, you know, once it's gotten to a state where you feel like it's something you're really making, whether that's a podcast or a blog or a, I don't know, whatever, Etsy store, I don't know, whatever that is. I mean, you need to have a sort of mental, emotional time and attention budget for how much you're going to put into it to get it to the point where you're evaluating how much more to do with it. We're speaking very nebulously here, but I do think it goes for lots of stuff. But, you know, and I've always believed also, though, on the other hand, though, it is useful to have different things you're working on at the same time, like writing different things that are in different states of doneness, but then having the clutch to know when to move seriously and with great focus from this thing to that thing. But it's hard to manufacture care about anything, because if you have to manufacture care about it, there's probably a reason you don't care about it. So then you find yourself asking, well, why is it I don't care about that? Which can be a very difficult conversation to have with yourself, but can be very valuable.
Okay, so I recently moved from Baltimore to Asheville, North Carolina. And moving to Asheville was something that my fiance and I had talked about for 2 years or something. And we had gone on this road trip and we had sort of explored different potential cities and we had decided that we liked Asheville. And we had talked about moving there a lot. And at a certain point, she was, you know, in a position in her life where it was ready to go. I had a new job. I worked remotely. Like, the things were all lined up. And so now that all the things are lined up, I care a lot and we're able to sort of take advantage of the situation and go. But there's a lot of things that I could have done better had I cared more in the months leading up to that. Like, you know, canceling my Comcast before I left instead of after I got the bill after I left. Or, you know, those types of things where, had I cared earlier, I would have put more time into planning the thing. And, you know, this extends to even, like, huge life projects. Like, at some point, I will care a lot about getting a decent amount of exercise or quitting smoking cigarettes, right? Those are things that, like, at some point, the doctors and I will come to an agreement that I care a lot about this. And it would be really convenient for my life if I cared about those things a lot right now when I'm in, you know, my mid-20s.
Right. Well, with all of those things, that's good. These are good examples. With whatever you're working on, whatever you're concerned with at a given time, I think it's also useful to understand your own motivations for things. Even if those motivations end up being extrinsic, even if your motivation is, I want to make my partner happy, I think it's useful to understand what's motivating you to want to, need to, have to, whatever that ends up being, do that thing. And then, you know, if you understand your motivations, then you can also start to understand your resistance to those things. Because, you know, resistance is a thing. We can't do everything, you know. And so, like, with the stuff like the moving, I mean, like, with moving, for me, that would be, I haven't moved in many years, but it's sort of this towering, giant, you know, wad of gum and hair. There's, like, so much stuff that has to be done in a certain order that it's really overwhelming. So there's a million ways to do that. I mean, there's your motivation of, well, you know, I'm motivated by... Fear is the wrong word, but you might say, well, like, geez, I'm really worried that I'm going to miss things or I'm going to forget things. There's that sort of like just generalized anxiety about the bigness of the project. And then there's all the resistance of like, yeah, but in the meantime, there's this other stuff that I've got to do. And this is something I can control more easily. So, I mean, that's kind of a mushy answer, but I think the motivation part becomes important. I think a lot of people tend not to ask themselves those difficult questions, maybe because it's obvious or maybe because it's painful, because sometimes you have to say, well, you know, and this to me, this gets into stuff like procrastination, because I've had the theory in the past that a lot of procrastination comes out of certain unsureness about what you're supposed to be doing, anxieties and stuff like that. But also just this idea that like you haven't accepted what stuff you're not going to ever do. Right. So when you've got an accumulation of stuff that's like clouding your vision about what you want to actually be doing, everything starts to feel like a mess. But in the case of a really big project, you look at the motivation, you go, well, I want to make this good for this person. I want to make this responsible. And therefore I have the ability to, for example, start making a big dumb list of a bunch of stuff that needs to get done at some point. And then let my mind kind of unwind around that and go like, okay, if I'm closing Comcast here, I got to open Comcast there. What order does this stuff need to go in? But it's no replacement for actually getting started. So sometimes going and just putting some stuff in a box, you know, can be a really great start. I've also always been intrigued by, I've talked about this lots of places, but I think it's worth thinking about is that guy, Mihai Csikszentmihalyi, who writes about creativity and flow and stuff like that. He has, you can just go Google something like, I just searched phonetically for Csikszentmihalyi, but you go and look for his, he has this this diagram explaining this matrix of level of challenge to level of skill and how we engage with stuff based on the combination of how challenging it is and how high skill it is. And again, lots of people have talked about this, including me, but, and so for example, he says I don't know if you guys can find this chart, but he says that, you know, if you're doing something that you're really, really good at and it's really, really challenging, that you'll have what's called a flow state where time kind of disappears, right? But on the other hand, if you're working on something that you have a very low level of skill and it's not challenging, you have apathy. Like, who cares, right? Like, then the ones to watch out for are things like, well, I've got a very high level of skill, but I've got a like medium level of challenge. And that becomes the realm of control. That becomes like where you can go and like tag MP3s and stuff like that. And, but like, you know, like anxiety, he says, comes out of having a high challenge level and low skill level. Like that's really, that can be a very stressful thing. But that's the kinds of things is like, you can take your emotions and reverse engineer sometimes a solution just by looking at, you know, well, like today I should be working on booking the trip that is going to get us to Asheville to go and look at rental properties. But like, oh boy, I really don't want to search the internet and make calls and stuff like that. So instead I'm going to like organize my fidget spinners. Like that's a pretty common thing for people. And it's difficult to remember to catch yourself doing it, but I think there are ways to do that. And again, if you can try to troubleshoot why this is such a problem for you right now, I think that can be hugely valuable.
It is funny. Those like totally like irrational, like borderline manic behavior things I find myself doing, like when I have three or four big projects going on and I find myself organizing folders or like checking to make sure my alarm clock is set, even though I've never changed when I wake up.
Right.
Or, you know, buying, I found myself on Amazon the other day buying extra toiletries for toiletries that I wasn't close to being out of yet. To like stock my closet.
Right, right. Well, but it also, the thing is, the corollary though is think about when you haven't started on your paper yet or your, you know, your thing for school and you're way behind. So now it's the night before. You feel guilty. You feel terrible. You might feel angry. You like, you're mad at yourself. You're mad at the assignment. There's all this stuff where like suddenly there's this influx of emotions that you have not clearly pinned to like a specific thing, but if you know that feeling. And so what do? You power through, you drink the coffee, you do whatever, you know, it's, there's all these ways that we try to generate motivation and care. And that can be really complicated because, you know, the truth is you should have been working on that all along probably, but that's not how it works. But like I said, part of that corollary also is, though, that like if you're just doing stuff, entering data into Excel for 3 hours, like it could really benefit you to take a break and to go take a walk and come back and maybe do something else. And that's sort of the like intermediate to pro level, is knowing when it is time to go and do something different. And it's also a big part of being a creative person, is not feeling like it's such a drag that there's any possibility of something interesting happening, and you get into a rut, and that's no fun.
Yeah. And I wonder if sort of the organizing the fidget spinners or the buying of toiletries thing, to me, that always feels like I catch myself doing that type of thing a lot, especially in a situation where I'm overwhelmed. Like my brain will disengage from the problem at hand and like go find an easy, achievable problem to solve.
Yeah, like doing the dishes is a great way to exercise control. Or like saying like, there's the times in life when you get, you know, very, very emotional and weirded out. And it's like, I just need to control this, like a little space for a while.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it almost feels like I'm in a situation for which I feel unprepared. And so the way I'm going to deal with that is to like make sure I'm completely overprepared for like some sort of very mundane thing that doesn't really need that much preparation, like, you know, toiletries for 3 months from now or something like that. It's like I'm never going to be caught with my pants down again. So because, you know, because I didn't organize this move very well, I'm just going to make sure, you know, for sure that my phone bill is paid for the next 6 months.
Right. Exactly. But if you do too much of that, you know, that's, you end up studying for the wrong test.
Right. No, totally. I'm not, I definitely think it's like a brain misfire most of the time, but it's just an interesting thing that like I see happen, that like my immediate instinct is like, well, that one up, like, let's go solve the next one.
Yeah. You do that too much, all of a sudden you're a Y2K preparer.
Right. Right. Yeah. Exactly. Right.
A prepper.
Yeah.
Oh, what kind of dogs do you have?
Well, I have a pit bull, and I'm at my fiance's parents' house, and they also have a pit bull.
Oh boy!
And so there's activities going on out there.
Two pit bulls are much larger than the sum of their parts.
Yeah, it's a gestalt.
You don't seem to be that bad.
You don't sweat much for a fat girl.
Yeah, right. And they said,
thank you. Well, that's really sweet. I am not as awful as my country seems. Thanks, buddy.
Yeah.
That's a sweet story, the way that turned out. That's nice. The twins, they stick together. You could separate them and still have the opioid crisis. That's nice to hear.
Yeah, it's like a nature versus nurture parable.
Yeah, see, nature versus nurture. That's a whole other topic. There you go. Give me some more rapid fires. I got to pee and pick up my kid.
You know, Merlin, we did have a few like rapid fire quick questions that aren't really fully formed topics, but just wanted to throw them at you
if
that's cool with you. One thing I'm curious is, do you listen back to your shows?
Oh yeah, I'm funny as hell. No, so I listen to an unconscionable amount of audio. In some cases, with in particular a show I do called Reconcilable Differences with John Siracusa, with that one, Siracusa doesn't do anything on that show. He's useless. And that's how we got him in, was that basically, you know, other people would do all the work. And then he just makes fun of me every week. Well, every other week, technically. It's barrel week.
Really, every 4 weeks.
Oh, God, you should have called in during... So with that show, I need to, like, tonight, like, one reason I have to dash away, I got to get my kid, but then I have to go, like, listen to this two-hour podcast, take all of the notes, what do we talk about, spend way too long writing a description that nobody reads, pick all the titles, then John gets to pick the title usually that he likes best out of those, which is fine. But, in that case, that's out of necessity. But, I also listen to them. Like, if it's not entertaining to me, like, I want to know that. And that's happened in the past, where there's shows where, like, if I don't like listening to it, how could I expect anybody else to want to listen to it? But that's amidst, I'm probably over-answering your question, I listen to so many podcasts. It is gross how many podcasts I listen
to. Yeah, it's...
like, bad.
Do you listen to Smart Speed? Do you speed it up?
I mean, I'm not a monster. I do for... A recent update, I use the app Overcast by Marco Arment.
Yeah.
And one nice addition he's added in a recent version is that you can have settings for the voice boost and speed settings
per show
for all podcasts. Yeah, or per podcast program.
Yeah.
So if there's a lot of music, I leave that off. But generally, I just leave it on smart speed. So it's like 1.1. I don't know how people listen at double speed. That's so weird. To me, that would be like speed eating. It's like, why would you do that? It's so strange to me. Especially with my chipmunk voice. I already sound like a broken saxophone. Why would you want to listen to it twice as fast? Gross.
Yeah.
But no, I get why people do that, especially if it's something where like you're listening to a ton of tech podcasts where people are just droning on about KB Lake, you know, for 4 hours. I guess you want to get through as much of that as you can.
So you've got four different shows. You kind of have a few different spinning plates at any given time. And they all have like pretty different, like they each have their kind of their own ethos. And I'm curious, when you are kind of like going through your week and an idea pops in your head, like, hey, this would be an interesting topic, do you kind of immediately triage it into one of your shows?
Very rarely.
Okay.
We've got for Reconcilable Differences, we've got a running Google Doc with potential topics in it. And with Back to Work, I mean, I've started really, like, we've said pretty much everything we need to say with that show. We just do it because we enjoy it. So I'm really into like reading through feedback from listeners. And so a lot of what I want to talk about often in the second half of that show comes out of direct feedback and questions from listeners. And I genuinely enjoy going through that usually every, you know, Monday or Tuesday and collecting all of that and putting it together. Roderick, I got nothing. Yeah. Who knows what John I'm going to get in a given week. And then Due by Friday, we have the challenge. And sometimes, like, I have this running bit now where I look up stupid stuff from the website next door. But apart from that, it's really just doing the challenge. Like, this week we listened to Sgt. Pepper. So, like, that was easy enough for me.
You know, having listened to Back to Work sort of since its inception, your sort of favors and disfavors about receiving emails, all of the things I've ever heard about that were funneled into the initial email I sent you to get you on the show.
you seem very neurotic. It was a real soup Nazi type situation.
Oh my God, dude. Okay, listen, here's the deal.
This is going to be a very easy email.
Dude, okay, listen.
And then I blew you off for like a month.
There's no way to win there.
No, you can't.
Oh, no, that's fine. I was like, okay, listen, here's the deal. Merlin Mann wants action items up front. I'm going to give him fucking action items up front.
You did great.
I'm not going to give him a three-paragraph thing. I knew it was ridiculous.
It's just not a good day.
But I hoped that as a parody of itself, it would succeed.
You did fine. And now here we are. It all worked out fine.
Good sir. Good sir. Here we
are. Is there a particular can of chili that you endorse?
That's a good question. I like... I think I got this from Roderick, but if you're going to have canned chili, the Wolf brand chili is pretty good. Mm-hmm. But, you know, making your own chili can be a pretty good thing. Yeah, but I think that's fine. We've got a burger place that makes pretty good chili. I think that's a pretty good bet. My only hack on that would be you might want to add a little bit of your own stuff to it. Like if you've got some ground beef you could toss in there, brown up your own. Mm. I have a dish I made last night that is really quite toothsome, which is you brown a bunch of ground beef. You can throw in stuff, throw in onions, throw in mushrooms, and then you make a box of wild rice with that mixture, and you have a delicious rice dish. If you're a person who eats rice, it's really, really good.
Yeah,
that sounds great.
That's a totally white trash Florida thing. Yeah, but it's so good.
I grew up in Japan. We regularly had like a pot of white rice available, and so I would just kind of dump some chili on top of the white rice and coat that with some sort of a cheese and just put it in the microwave and.
Is cheese a weird thing in Asia? I've heard people are weird about cheese.
Yeah, I was actually just talking to my fiance about this today. Like, I don't like shredded cheese almost anywhere except for on like a chili. But I don't like it on a baked potato. I don't like it on a taco. Huh. There's all these sort of traditional applications of a shredded cheese, and to me it just seems sort of like an aberration.
I admire that. I admire your bespoke approach to cheese. I think there's some kinds of stuff we just take as received wisdom and we slather it all over everything. And, you know, like I say, motivation. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, the cheese was so hard to find in Indonesia that there was an expat grocery store where a guy would literally check a cooler full of like Cracker Barrel cheese and fly it across the world and sell it for like $14 a log because everyone was so cheese deprived.
That's great. Oh man, Asia. Yeah. It's really a land of contrasts.
Godfather 1 or Godfather 2?
Tough. I mean, it's a Sophie's choice. Probably Godfather 2 just because sometimes if you account for how improbable it is that would be as good as or arguably better than the first. I find both very absorbing in different ways, but I think Godfather 2 might be my favorite movie. It's definitely up there. What about you guys? Let's hear about you. What's your Godfather? What do you pick?
I strongly go one.
Yeah, it's a good movie.
Oh, really?
It's got Sonny. It's got Santino.
It was an experience for me. You know, the first time I saw The Godfather, I watched it all the way through. I watched it on a laptop screen under my covers so as not to be discovered watching The Godfather. It was an experience.
Wow.
No, I go two because, you know, I remember as a teenager watching the first one, not really knowing what I was getting into at like 15 and thinking, you know, Robert De Niro should really be in this. And then I got to the second one and there he was.
Oh, isn't that hilarious? Because you would assume he's in that movie.
Are you, do you get worried at all about Apple's new podcast metrics?
That's an interesting question. We talked about this a little bit on Back to Work yesterday. I think having more ways to measure are a good thing. I have these overriding concerns that continue to dog me about the consolidation and de-independencizing of podcasts.
Right.
Like there's some big players and some ad middlemen that clearly are making a play, you know? So, I mean, it's the thing that I ended up talking about with Dan was that, like, for example, a show like Due by Friday, according to our stats, the Apple Podcast app, which is far and away apparently the most popular podcast app in the world, accounts for 10% of our listens.
Mm-hmm.
40%, 40% Overcast, 30%. What's Russell's one? Not Downcast,
Pocket Cast?
The other one. Yeah, 30% Pocket Cast, and then it's just like a long, long tail after that.
Hmm.
So in that case, I mean, it's 10%, only 10% of the statistics are even addressable, but it could still be useful. I think it's going to be very beneficial for big shows with brand advertisers where most of the people listening are listening in Apple Podcasts. But, you know, it's good. If it helps keep things independent longer, I'm happy.
Yeah.
The longer that I don't have to put my stuff in Stitcher, the happier I am.
That seems like a real racket.
Yeah. Oh, it's a racket. It's a shit sandwich. They come at you with this whole like, oh, we're SoundCloud. We'll host it for you. And it's like, no, you're making this bad. Like if your page does not have a link to an MP3 on it, it's not a podcast. End of story. Close the book. At least for me. Like I'm an old timer. I believe in that. I believe I should be able to huff duff anything that I want because I'm weird like that. And like this whole idea of taking it into this, Huffduffer's great. But this whole way of like taking this essentially open medium and like trying to close it up and consolidate it under a few whole, I hate to sound like such a Marxist, but like it's so gross and really antithetical and it harms the way that this got popular. My entire career, such as it is only possible by giving away tons of stuff.
Didn't we already learn this lesson from like desktop publishing, like from the web, you know, like...
I mean, but, you know, things change.
All of the analytics we have now, but I mean, it's like, just like you were saying, like, you wouldn't want to be an author today, you know, like a young guy starting out as a writer on the web, right?
Well, and it's, you know, it's sort of a little bit like when Radiohead put out their, was it In Rainbows, when they put out that album and said, pay whatever you want for it. And a lot of people very intelligent, and it was very successful, and a lot of people intelligently said, well, yeah, Radiohead can do that. That's fine for Radiohead. It's just that, like, today, I mean, I don't like to talk about this too much, but I have fairly grave concerns about the future of independent podcasting based on advertising and offer code type things. I don't know if most medium-sized podcasts are going to be able to make dough from that in the next 5 years.
Hmm.
So I'm potentially open to stuff like Patreon. I used to be very against it, but like it's starting to seem very sensible. If you have a cult show and a declining number of...
It's a living!
So, yeah, I don't know. I just like podcasts. I like them a lot.
It is kind of odd. Like, I don't know who would have predicted 10 years ago that podcasts would be one of the last remaining kind of like Wild West frontiers on the internet.
Well, it doesn't hurt that there's no gatekeeper.
Right.
I mean, the closest thing we have to a gatekeeper really is iTunes. It's like, if you want to get it broadly distributed, like, for example, Overcast, I believe... I think Marco gets all those feeds based on iTunes. It's how he does stuff like increasingly now, I think this is public, but one way he tries to keep private feeds out is he only shows it as a searchable thing if it's in the iTunes directory, which I think is a very elegant way to handle that. But like, that's the neat part about it is like when the web is good, there should be a lot of stuff going on that you don't know about. Not because it's on the dark web, but because it's just not your thing. Like you can find your thing if you seek out your thing, but Serial getting really popular does not harm due by Friday. I'm not persuaded it particularly helps us, but it doesn't hurt us. People can go and listen to whatever it is that they like and discover new things and move on from there. And like, that still feels very alive to me. And I hope that keeps going because I think it's good for everybody.
Hmm. What are the topics on the RecDiffs channel that that Syracuse won't let you get to?
Oh, that's a good question. Let me go look. There's generally stuff that either he or I, for some reason, are resistant about. And then he twists it and tries to make me into the bad cop because he's not a good person. This is virtue signaling. Let's see here.
I would love to meet his children 10 years from now.
Oh, absolutely. let's see. We talked about housework. How to do full media blackout. How to change your mind about things. I'm going to nail him down on exercise at some point. At some point, we're going to eventually talk about the concept of good cop, bad cop. I keep trying to get him to talk about this movie I saw on Netflix called The Barkley Marathons, which I thought was very interesting. Mm-hmm. Have you seen that? I'm not going to say anything. Just go check it out. The Barkley, B-A-R-K-L-E-Y, Barkley Marathons movie. What else? And there's tons that one of us or the other for some reason. Oh, I want to talk about the creepiness of twins. He wants to talk about that. I think twins are creepy, and he never wants to talk about it.
I could see him having a few objections there. Oh. He's going to make you feel really bad about twins.
Oh, he's going to make me feel so bad. Well, I'm just glad that the people have the opportunity. Shut up.
He's like the mayor or something.
He's the worst.
One of the key benefits we keep gaining from this podcast is that like we get to talk to people who are either in their 20s and killing it, or past their 20s and can tell us about that time. And like,
you know, I think what people in their 20s love is people in their 50s telling them how to live in their 20s. They love that.
sure. But I think
I vaguely remember being in my 20s. Let me give you some life advice.
I don't think it's as much that as it is that like, I kind of wonder like at what point, if ever, did you like hit the point where you really settled down with the idea that you were you and had kind of a direction that you wanted to go with your life, both sort of professionally and like structurally?
No. No, never really. I mean, and any time that I did, of course, fate or the godmother or something would come along and knock the world out of my hands and say, ah, smart, do you think you understand how life works? Nice try. And then, of course, as you get older, everything seems more dangerous and harrowing. You know, I don't know, it's nice to be in your 20s and not have your ass kicked yet. There's a lot to recommend it. I have a lot of friends that are in their 20s or early 30s that haven't really had their ass kicked, and I really admire them because they aren't broken inside yet. And that's a good thing to be. There's not that much to be gained from becoming cynical and broken. But, you know, this is kind of a cliche, but I think it's true. It is a cliche. But, you know, there's everything seems important. Not only can everything seem possible, but a lot of stuff seems very important in your 20s. And it can be important, like you don't want to die or lose a limb. But, like, there's a pretty good chance that in this Kierkegaardian way, like, whether you like it or not, you're going to survive your 20s. And then it becomes a question of, like, you know, with what amount of class and decorum did you survive your 20s? You know, and how much debt did you pile up or something like that? It just seems like there's so much pressure on folks your age to do all of these things. And, you know, as much as I love Shark Tank, I think it's created a nation of people who think that they're, you know, a failure if they aren't worth this much money by a certain time. And
yeah, well, I'm going to give you the $50,000, but I'm going to give it to you as debt.
Well, yeah, you may be give if as you may know, I have an entire wedding line and my cupcake in a cup, and I'll give it to you as a line of credit. But for that reason, I'm out. I don't know. I don't have a good answer to that. I hate giving advice to people. The older I get, the more difficult it is for me to give advice to people. Just not only because I'm not very good at it, but because it's difficult to hear. The advice you need to hear, you're never going to hear. You're only going to hear the advice that makes sense and is doable to you at a given time, most of us. I mean, it's like, you know, how many people on either side of the political spectrum go onto Twitter and Facebook to find out what they should be thinking differently? It's just not how our brains work. Yeah. And sometimes, you know, there's that often quoted fact about how the human mind isn't, you know, even really fully developed until you're in your mid-20s. You know, there's a reason that teenagers take so many risks. It's because of, you know, cognitive and neural development. And so, like, it's, you know, you're throwing good conversation after bad to try and tell a teenager not to drive a car fast. You just have to hope they don't die. So I don't know. It's a real art. And the people who are great at this, the people who are great teachers, the people who are great counselors, people who are great mentors, are usually very well suited at focusing in on one little piece of advice that can be useful to that person right now. And it really can just be one little corner of the treasure map that helps them find the rest of the treasure map. And I wish I had more skill and expertise at that. But sometimes the best I can do is just say, don't worry, you're probably not going to die. And if you do, it won't matter.
Yeah, totally. I think I was.
That'll be useful.
Oh, that's great. That's great. That's a fitting start right there. Yeah, no, I was 22 when I realized that it was like statistically unlikely for me to die just like as a matter of course on a regular day. It really shook some things up for me. You know, I was 22 and I had basically been living under the assumption that like if things got bad enough, I would just cease to exist.
Yeah. You have to assume that you'd just be consumed by your emotions. It's the only logical outcome.
Or spontaneously combust.
Yeah, you just blink out of existence.
I don't think it's spontaneous. I think it's more like you've accumulated enough failures that the Grim Reaper is just going to show up and take your life. You're done. You're out of lives.
He's not even excited to be there. He's just doing it
because it's his job.
Yeah.
Believe me, buddy, I'm not happy either. I'd rather be doing other stuff.
There's something really special about riding the streetcar back and forth in New Orleans, just waiting for him to show up. And then it's like 5 a.m. and you're like, oh my God.
He shows up and he's like, yeah, you know, I'd like to really get into the Civil War or whatever, yeah. But it's my job to take people's lives. It's a living.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, is that sort of like Jack flying back and forth to Australia and Lost to try to get back to the island?
Could be. Mm-hmm. It's a pretty good show. You watch The Leftovers?
Oh, do I.
Wow. It's a heck of a thing.
Did you see the ending?
I did. I think we're going to talk about it. Oh, you know, I like the other two seasons, but this was a good one. I should watch it all again. I'm tired usually when I'm watching it, so I'm not giving it my full attention, and I end up just turning it off and watching Veep again. Mm. But I love that show. I love the ambition of that show. Sorry, off topic.
HBO's turned Sunday nights into like a weekly holiday.
Oh my God, Sunday night is bananas. There's like five shows we watch on Sunday nights.
It's pretty amazing.
Yeah. It's when you're glad to be paying that $20 a month. And then it goes away and it's just like, do I want to watch Mad Max, which I already own? No, not really.
Yeah, but it's nice because you could just shut it off, you know, and then bring it back on for the shows you like. Or wait till they all pile up, do 1 month, and then just binge everything.
That's a good idea, but I watch so much Veep. I'm going back through season 4 for the third time right now, and it never stops making me happy. It's my favorite show.
There's such a density of jokes on that show.
I can't get my wife to just, I turn on the subtitles, we turn off the lights, and I'm like, watch the TV and listen to Richard Splett. Read what Richard Splett is saying, because if you're not paying attention, you're going to miss half of the jokes on this show, because Richard is speaking so quietly. Oh no, actually, that's a federal crime. Like, you're going to miss these great bits.
Yeah. Well, I will watch within the same week. I'll rewatch the episode that just came out, and it feels like a different episode because I'm hearing so many different jokes.
And there's these running concepts, like the concept of what is in the bag that he's carrying.
Oh, the bag, or just the concept of like just the whole like in a similar way to like, I don't know if you watch Parks and Rec, but in a similar way to like Kyle, the lawyer, and Jerry are like, or like, why does everybody hate Kyle and Jerry? Why does everybody hate libraries? Right. What there's just this bit that people in Pawnee don't like salads in libraries, and it comes up 3 times a season, and it's always funny. And in this case, it's like, Catherine, can you leave the room? Like, it's funny each time, but it's super funny because it always happens. She wants to shut down her. Catherine wants to do a bullying campaign, anti-bullying campaign, and Julia Louis-Dreyfus doesn't want her to do it. She says, wait a minute, are you bullying me into not doing my bullying campaign?
Oh,
anyway, TV's good.
TV,
I like TV.
Who doesn't?
Oh. TV. Where would that be on the Matrix? I guess that would be high skill, low challenge. I'm good at TV.
Yeah.
Title.
I think The Leftovers is high skill.
Oh yeah, that's difficult mode for sure.